Translation: I create this cosmos by such penance, I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. Purport, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home, back to Godhead, and must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. Even for material prosperity, name, and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why, then, are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, He wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master. And to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. Srijami tapase vedam, gasami tapasa punaha, bibarmi tapasa vishvam, viryam me duscharam tapaha. I create this cosmos by such penance, I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padangamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dinabandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kantha, Radha Kantha Namastute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Rishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vanchakalpataru Vishcha, Kripa Sindhu Bhye Bacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, everyone. As we mentioned, we're carrying on with Canto 2, Chapter 9, Verse 24. These verses we have been seeing, obviously, the Lord has been speaking to Brahma. This is obviously during Brahma's stupendous endeavor to obviously develop the universe and all the creations that come within it. Before we start, I want to ask for the blessings of all the Vaishnavs, the seniors, and obviously everyone watching online, and try to say something. Obviously, yesterday we had Atul Krishna Prabhu give a wonderful discourse. I'll be honest with you, a lot of the things I would have said, I think Atul Krishna Prabhu has covered already. So nonetheless, we'll try to pick up from where we left off this week as well. So this penance and austerity, it's we know that Prabhupada actually says here that easygoing life and attainment of perfection in realization, transcendental realization, cannot go together. And often Prabhupada has said that even this human life is actually meant for tapo divyam. It's meant for divine austerity. As much as we try to enjoy this life and have a nice life, generally for most people, it doesn't work out that pleasurable. There generally is more like issues and problems to deal with than there is actually real pleasure that you can actually get from this life. And even in those rare circumstances where you've got certain personalities due to their, you know, whatever, really good karma, they might have had a very nice, easygoing life, but then there's also been a lack of satisfaction there as to, like, you know, what they could have done with that life if it went in any other way. And this is something that's very important to understand. And Prabhupada mentions here that even in the material world, for people, if they want to succeed, they have to perform severe austerities. We know from ancient times these great demonic personalities like Ravana and, I guess Hiranyakashipu, who is the same person, they performed incredible austerities, not for any spiritual realization, but just for material prosperities. And even in this age, yesterday in one of the Bhakti Shastri lessons, one of the devotees was mentioning how, you look at a lot of these university professors and things, I think it was Hadai probably, right? They're brilliant what they do, and they're like completely immersed in their work, like that's all they know, that's their sole focus. So you can see that even materially speaking, people perform incredible austerities. The other day I had to go to this event where I had to wake up very early, and I was at Bushi train station, and it was like 3:30 in the morning or something, and I think I'd be like the only person there. And even then, at that time in the morning, there's all these people there, like, you know, waking up early to do their work. Like, for us, it's like, you know, just making the effort to come for Mangalarti is like, yeah, wow. You know, it's like, wow, something, you know. But they're, like, waking up just to do their daily jobs, you know. So people are performing austerities and penances day in, day out. Of course, one thing that has been mentioned here, and obviously following on from yesterday's class that Prabhuji was mentioning, is that for us, the austerities, the penances we do, they have to be done for Krishna. And that's really how you can make it worth it. Krishna says to Arjun, yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kuru samadarpanam. Whatever austerities you perform, doing it as an offering to me. And we also know that the austerities we perform in devotional life, they can be in different categories. And I think has also been mentioned before that there are austerities and penances in different modes of nature, which can also impact on the quality of our devotional service. Lord Kapila Dev talks about this in more detail at the end of the third canto to his mother, Devahuti, about the different types of devotional service we do in different modes. We don't need to go into detail here, but even within each mode, there are three subsections. So like you've got mode of ignorance, this low-level mode of ignorance where people think that I can do devotional service by harming other people, you know, and they've convinced that this is my devotional service. You know, this is the penance I'm going to undertake. And then you've got mid-level ignorance, then you've got high-level ignorance. And then, of course, you've got mode of passion, another three categories there. And then mode of goodness, another three categories. And then Srila Prabhupada mentions there are actually 81 different categories, because those nine can also be timed by the nine processes of devotional service that we do. You know, the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, these types of nine processes. So nine times nine, there's 81 different categories of devotional services that we can do. Obviously, for us, the ideal is to obviously bring it to the level of mode of goodness, because from that mode of goodness platform, we can then obviously rise to pure goodness as well. So there are penances, austerities we must do. And as Prabhupada said here, that even when one comes to devotional life, there are penances to be done. And he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in their devotional life. This morning, one of my friends was mentioning to me, he's looking to get initiated soon. And he's saying to me how, finally, like all the, you know, the hard work, the hardships, the difficulties, the austerities that I've performed, now it's finally going to come to fruition. It's going to finally result in me getting initiated. And I was just thinking, yeah, and absolutely, you know, it's good for you, Prabhu. It's amazing. I wish him the best. But I was also thinking, you know, it doesn't end there, you know. It's going to carry on, you know. In fact, when you get initiated, there's a whole new level of austerity and, you know, penances that one has to go through. If anything, you probably get more intense as you're after initiation. Because initiation, the word initiation, initiate, it means to start, actually. It's not the culmination. Your thing has just begun now. We need to bring an intensity to our devotional service. Sometimes when we come to Krishna consciousness, we come in initially as new bhaktas and we're really fired up. We want to go for it. We're enthusiastic. And then we start to find our groove. You know, we get used to it. You know, we know where our spot in the classroom is and where's our japa spot. And then, you know, we're getting used to our services. We know how the dynamics work. And it becomes kind of comfortable, you know. It's like, yeah, we're in the groove. Sometimes we'll see that, sometimes we plateau. So there's actually, The thing we have to understand that there has to be an intensity for us to keep pushing ourselves. The surrender that we do to Krishna is not just like a one thing event that, okay, I surrender now and that's it, it's plain sailing now. The surrender has to keep coming again and again and again. Krishna is very merciful, however. He accepts us for who we are, no matter what our desires, even if we have mixed desires. There's a famous verse, Akama Sarva Kamova. Moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Even if you have no desires, akama, or all sorts of desires, sarva kama, right? You turn towards Krishna. But the interesting thing is, in that same verse, there's a word later on that says tivrena. Tivrena actually indicates intensity, right? You have to actually then bring some intensity to your devotional service. It's not enough. And I know that obviously nowadays, often when we do preaching about Krishna consciousness to people, especially doing bridge preaching, there's a mood of, okay, we have to, holistic lifestyle, balance. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's true. There is that element there, you know. You live your life. It's a gradual process, Prabhu. It's a gradual thing. You don't go too fanatical. Just, you know, gradually build yourself up. And definitely, there is definitely that there. But at the same time, as you go more and more into it, the intensity needs to increase. I remember actually a few years ago, Kripamoy Prabhu gave a class and he said that generally what happens is the longer we're in Krishna consciousness, the older we get, the tendency is to kind of like sort of go down a gear a bit and just relaxingly perform it. Whereas actually what he's saying is that no, the longer you stay in it, the more you have to get intensify your practice. And obviously intensity can mean in terms of the quality of our devotional service that we do. It can also mean in the quantity that we do. You see, the more advanced devotees become, they don't waste any time. They, literally, I see that, you know, like in some of the devotees I've met in my journey. And, like, every little bit of, like, you know, spare time they've got, they're doing something devotional. For a lot of us, or myself, I'm speaking for myself, like, I need my chill time. You know, I'll do service and stuff, but then I want to space out, you know. But they don't, they're just like on it, you know, and like, how do you do that, you know? Like, doesn't your brain need like some sort of, or maybe their relaxation is the devotional service. They've come to that stage where they're getting so much nectar for it. It's become like, you know, that kind of like their relaxation as well as their service, as well as everything. So yeah, the quality of our service, the quantity of our service, sometimes one has to also take on services that are difficult, practices that are difficult, to push ourselves. Often we come and we want to do activities that are in line with our nature. Often there's a lot of talk about, okay, what's my nature? How can I be situated in my nature? But then it comes to a point where sometimes one has to do what the yatra needs, even if it's not in our nature. And then, of course, there's also taking responsibility, not just for our own spiritual life, but for others. That's another big penance. You know, it's one thing to look after your own practice and trying to deal with that, and then trying to deal with other people and trying to like guide them and manage them. You know, that's another whole level of penance. But by doing this, we also get more mercy. You know, the more we kind of stretch ourselves and push ourselves in this movement, we also get a lot of mercy that comes through as well. Obviously, I want to make a point here, though. It doesn't mean that when we take on difficulties, especially if they're not in our nature, not that we have to obviously be in that situation all the time, because that's also not sustainable. Like Tamakrishna Maharaj, many years ago, made the comment that most people that have, let's say, left the movement in the past, it definitely is not because of Srila Prabhupada. In fact, even if you speak now to certain people who've, let's say, come out of ISKCON, most of them actually have got a lot of fondness for Srila Prabhupada and the philosophy. It's not even, and I thought this is quite interesting, it's not even because they got blown up by devotees, you know, because you think that's like, you know, they got fried out, they left, you know, they can't deal with the devotees. It's not even actually that. It's actually because they weren't situated properly in the service. And after a certain point, if you're not situated, then how long can you carry in that position? Unless you're transcendental. But if you've got your conditionings to deal with, then you have to kind of dovetail them in the right kind of environment, the right kind of service that you do. But whatever it is, yeah, we have to have that sense of determination and discipline. Again, Krishna says to Arjun, Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridhavrataha dridha. So there has to be that determination in our spiritual life. If you look at the amount of effort that a materialist puts in to succeed in the material world, a spiritualist should be giving as much, if not more, determination in their spiritual life. The spiritual life is not like a side thing that you're doing as part of your life. Like, you know, okay, Monday to Friday I work, and then, you know, Saturday I'm with the family, and then Sunday I come to the temple, I bow down, I make a donation, I take a sweet. That's my Krishna consciousness for the week. You know, obviously we come to the stage where it becomes like the main thing in our life. And yeah, that's the thing. We have to dovetail it because penance is unavoidable. Every single person in this world, even if you're not in Krishna consciousness, according to the Vedic scriptures, we have our manusha dharma. So we have certain austerities we have to do just to be a human being. We have our swadharma. We have certain austerities we have to do based on our nature, right? Like, so for example, brahmanas, they have a duty to fight ignorance. Kshatriyas have a duty to fight infringement. Vaishyas have a duty to fight insufficiency in society. And then Sudras have a duty to fight indolence. So the whole point is we have to perform certain penances in our life according to our swadharma. And so do it, obviously, in line with Krishna. And the thing is, even though Prabhupada is saying here that the Lord wants to see how painstaking our penance is, the Lord is very kind, though. In fact, the Lord himself comes down to even perform penances to show us. When the Lord came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? He says, right? E mata bhakti bhav kari angikar, apani charite bhakti karile prachar. Right? I'm coming down as a bhakta, in the mood of a bhakta, and showing, and then I'm going to show people what it is to be a devotee and propagate that devotion. You know, and through that, then, so he's actually showing this for us as well, how we can do it. Actually, I'll share a verse here. This is from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 40. Yeah, this is interesting. So this is Krishna. He's speaking to Arjun, obviously. It's Bhagavad Gita. I'll just read the English. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. So it's interesting. There are three types of people that will fall down, and for them there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Ignorant people. So ignorant people don't know the goal of life. So therefore, and they don't know the process, obviously. If they don't know the goal, how will they know the process? Then you've got faithless people. Faithless people may know the goal of life, but they don't practice it. They don't have faith to want to practice the process. And they will also be the same destination. Most people in Krishna consciousness practicing are probably not in those categories, right? We know the process. We know the goal. The fact that we're here means that we're practicing. But this is interesting. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor the next as well. So doubting soul means that you could be knowing the goal of life, you could be knowing the process and practicing both, but you still have doubts, which is why you may end up with the same destination as someone who doesn't know the goal, doesn't know the process, and doesn't have faith. So what's the difference? How does one relieve the doubts? One has to have determination to practice regardless of whatever doubts the mind is giving us. So therefore, again, that determination has to come in, that sense of penance to actually push through and actually go beyond our comfort zone and actually dive into the process that is actually going to really help us in this endeavor. And one of the exemplars of such determination, of course, is Dhruva Maharaj. And it's no wonder that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar Pandit, when they're in Jagannath Puri, they talked about the Dhruva Maharaj pastime hundreds of times. Mahaprabhu want the pastime recited hundreds and hundreds of times. And it's amazing that, you know, he's an exemplar of devotion. Now, of course, there's two sides here with austerities. Yes, we need to intensify our practice. At the same time, I should also give credence to say there is some a gradual process. We know that. With one of the groups, we're studying NOI, not the Bhakti Shastra. I know you guys are doing NOI as well, but there's another group that's doing NOI. And, you know, it talks about how in the first verse, right, Vacha Vegam and Jiva Vegam, that we should control the urge to speak and the what we eat. And, you know, it's very clear that from the purport that one should not even, like, eat prasadam. If you're eating prasadam for your own satisfaction, then that's not considered, like, the correct thing to do, right? One should be completely, detached from what the prasadam is, right? Mahaprabhu also says, right, bhalana khaibyaro, bhalana poribe, don't eat well, don't eat, wear nice clothes, don't listen to mundane gossip, right? Gramma kartana, shunibe, gramma vartana, kohibe, right? All these things are there. And yet at the same time, if you look at text 4, Srila Prabhupada and Purport mentions in relation to the six loving exchanges, you know, bhungte bhojayate chaiva, that obviously the devotees should provide feasts for the others, you know, to exchange prasadam as a loving exchange. So it's like, okay, wait, so there is feasting going on, or should we not feast and be completely like, you know, like eating like just whatever comes to our plate? So it's a combination. When we come to Krishna consciousness, it'll be difficult for us to drop off our conditioning straight away. So there is a gradual process. That's why Prabhupada said that, okay, you come in, you do, there has to be some element of enjoyment to kind of ease you into the process. But as you dive deeper into the process and get the higher taste, then the external activity you're doing won't so matter so much. So you see that in the initial stage, when people come, I'm taking an example of prasadam here. So Prabhupada encouraged, yes, take prasadam, take up till you get filled up to here. And I want my disciples to eat so they can waddle like ducks afterwards, right? But the thing is that once you're practicing sincerely for years and decades, the idea is that, okay, it comes to a stage where you're getting a higher taste where you don't need to go through that again. You don't need to then indulge like that. Because if you're still on that level, then that means, okay, what's going on? The intensification has to happen where we're pushing for a higher taste, I mean by Krishna's mercy, where then we don't get so attached to the material aspects that we need to kind of bring us into the process, especially coming from the material to the spiritual way of life. And so there is a balance there in the penances we do, you know. Also, not just doing penance for the sake of penance. You know, you've got niyamagraha and niyamagraha, right? Not just having that balance there. Another thing that when it comes to penance is sometimes we get into the mood where we'll push forward and really do hardcore penances for like a few days in the year. And then the rest of the year, we're like just chilling. Now, it's interesting. Madhvacharya, he said that I measure a person not by what they can do in a day, but what they do every day. So Kesha Maharaj also mentions this, right? The everyday principle. What are we doing every day to give our bhakti that freshness? You know, what are we doing every day? Like, for example, for a lot of us, the key thing is obviously like, you know, obviously the japa, the Mangal Arati. My spiritual master obviously recently left this world. And I found out that he was really big on Mangal Arati. And I was like, of course, I mean, you know, all you know, high-level devotees would be. They would encourage me to do Mangal Arati. And then my god sister was telling me, no, not just, because, you know, I try to make a point to come to morning program, right, or at least do it at home. But, like, if I come to the morning program, I tend to come from, like, japa onwards, right? And I think, yeah, that's good, you know, I'm doing some of the morning program here. And then she's like, no, Mangal Arati, like, you need to be there 4:30. And it's like, if you're not there for 4:30, Maharaj said it's better you miss the latter part of the morning program if you need to, but do the Mangal Arati. I'm like, oh, okay, wow. I'm trying to come here for Mangal Arati. I mean, that's like one, maybe minor stereotype for many. But, you know, that's an example. Like, what's the everyday principle you're doing? Everyday Mangal Arati, everyday doing good rounds, you know? So these are the kind of things. And, you know, like Bhaktisanta Maharaj said that I give aggressive grace to those who can follow things properly. I want my disciples to be working so hard during the day that by the time they go to sleep, they're instantly gone to sleep, right? And then when it's time to wake up, they instantly wake up. Like, that's some real discipline there, you know? I mean, obviously, it's Bhaktisanta Maharaj. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki, Jai. So there is that sense of the daily penances that we do in our devotional life and how we can keep them going and keep them consistent. And initially it might be difficult, but the rewards that we get from that are immeasurable. Like Sachin Andarmarj, he mentioned an interesting thing. The pain that we experience from being disciplined may give us some discomfort, but the pain we will experience from not doing enough or letting up, the pain that you get from regret will end up causing you depression. Because what will happen in years to come, you look back and it's like, I should have done it properly, Then, I could have, even if it meant that I pushed myself, I could have actually got to, a certain state of being. Shruti Dharmaprabhu, former temple president, once mentioned that people go through midlife crisis because they have the realization that they didn't help others enough over the years. So helping others is also a penance that as devotees we should be doing, taking responsibility for others and trying to guide them. It's difficult, right? But when you get older, you look back and you think, yeah, actually it will give you a satisfaction that, you'll think that all the austerity and discipline, yeah, it was all worth it. So there's penance there. There's active penance. Dhruva Maharaj was encouraged to do active penance. Narad Muni told him, you actively go to Madhuvan in Vrindavan and you actively chant the Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudeva mantras. There's also the passive penance that we have to experience just by being in devotional service. There's penance just to become a devotee. And then once you become a devotee, it's not that the penance stops. As it's mentioned here, the penance continues. There's also the penance that will come just by being engaged, like Kunti Devi, being a devotee of Krishna, and then having to go through so many obstacles. It's not that she was actively seeking them out. They were coming to her, and her tapasya was just to basically tolerate it, and in the midst of it all, still maintain a connection with Krishna. So there's two aspects. There's the active penance, there's the passive penance as well. So I think we'll finish on this last point, since we're talking about Lord Brahma. And Atul Krishna Prabhu mentioned a very nice point here that we should not criticize Brahma for creating the material world because he did it as an instruction from Krishna, right? And I thought that, Lord Brahma is actually a really nice example of someone who's a devotee of Krishna and has performed incredible penances that we can actually get inspiration from. Right, so this is something obviously is mentioned in our Brihad Bhagavatamrita seminars and things as well, that he starts off, he doesn't know what's going on, and then he's obviously given this responsibility to develop this world, right, to create the creations and things, and often we find ourselves, and this is something I'm sure devotees can relate to, whether you're a preacher or a manager, you come to Krishna consciousness, you're given a responsibility. You're not given adequate resources for it. Has everyone ever felt like that? That, I'm doing this, but I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to manage this. Lord Brahma's there. It's complete darkness. He doesn't have some sort of training education workshop that he's gone to 101 of how to create the universe. He's just like there in the darkness. He doesn't have like manpower to help him. We're like managing projects. Like, this is the classic. I'm looking at Sankirtan. We've both been serving together, and it's like, we don't have enough manpower. We're stretched. We need people for this. We don't know how to do it, right? I mean, this is probably ISKCON all over. I'm sure, like, in all ISKCON projects, people go through this. He didn't have manpower. He didn't have the resources. He didn't have training education. But he was required to do penance, tapa, right? He was doing tapa. And then through that tapa, that connection to Krishna is developing more and more. And then eventually, after a lot of tapasya, a lot of intense practice and commitment and sacrifice, eventually, he then obviously gets a bit more understanding of what to do with the material world, right? Often we find ourselves, even once we become devotees, we have to do a lot of intense tapasya before we start to make some success with our services, with our projects. Then what happens, but it doesn't end there. He starts to create the material world, and then who are the first people that he creates? Anyone knows? The four Kumaras, right? The four Kumaras come, and he gives them an instruction. What did he want them to do? procreate. Did they follow his instruction? No. They said, no, we're going to stay just like this, right? We're going to stay in these five-year-old forms. So even you get to devotional life, you become a devotee, you start following Krishna's instructions, you start doing the tapasya, results may come through, you start getting manpower. Even then, there is no guarantee that your people will follow you. And again, this is probably something like, why are they not following me? I'm preaching to this group. They're not doing what I'm doing, that I'm trying to tell them to do, or I'm a manager. They're not following properly, this and that. All that happens, right? And then he goes on, he creates, after the four Kumaras, I can't remember who comes next. I don't know if it's Narad Muni, Shiva, Rudra, right? Rudra comes, and then through him, he wants to, like, you know, then create. So then they produce, right, the Rudras, and then they end up destroying the universe. So it's like you get manpower, though initially they don't even listen to what you want to do. Then eventually they do decide to do what you want them to do, but they completely do it in a destructive form. And it's like, what are you doing? You're not meant to do it like this. You know, again, it's something I think we can all like relate with at some point in our lives. Then he creates the Manaputras. The Manaputras, I think they try to attempt to do the job, but they don't do it so well. Right? Again, something we have to, the austerities we have to deal with. Bhaktisanta Maharaj, right? He sent his initial disciples to the West before Srila Prabhupada to propagate Krishna consciousness, but it didn't quite work out the way he wanted it to. And then eventually, after all of that, then he produces Manu. I think Swayambhuva Manu and Satarupa. And then finally, after all these trying and failing, then he finally gets these two personalities that I can start to procreate properly. And it's interesting, like, you know, when you look at Srila Prabhupada's life, as a devotee, as a pure devotee, even after spending all that time, you know, he did so much, like, practice throughout his whole life, even as a grihastha. And then he starts to set up things in Jhansi, you know, the League of Devotees. It fails. He tries to set up things in Delhi, right? That also, like, didn't quite work out properly. He went through so many obstacles. He didn't have money to actually go back and forth from Vrindavan to Delhi, you know, to, like, sort out the magazines and the publications and things like that. It's not that the resources are just onto him on a plate. As a pure devotee, he still had to do all this tapasya. So that's something we have to be prepared for to make the success in our Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, you've got Brahma. He carries on. And then, of course, as he creates this personality called Vak. And then, you know, he then ends up getting attracted to Vak and then ends up falling down, right? Now, it's interesting here. So even the intensity of the service can also make us fall down if it gets too much into mode of passion, or if we get too much into mode of ignorance, we might get bored with our services, and then that also make us fall down, break the regs, whatever it is. Although, just to give credit to Brahma, Lord Brahma here, if you read the pastime, the Vak pastime, Prabhupada does mention that was also preordained. So in other words, that's also part of Krishna's plan to make him fall down, to go to another level of material existence so he can do another level of creation. Because you need to go more deeper into Maya to then create more of the creation, creative aspects. So that's another thing we need to consider. So it's not all Brahma's fault. He was also being used as an instrument here. And anyway, but then it doesn't end there, right? Eventually, after all of that, he then eventually, you know, he creates all these 8,400,000 species of life. And it's like, what an achievement. Like, you know, no one, we cannot compare with such a thing. He's like the highest, you know, leader, material person, you know, the manager of the universe, right? And even then, once you've done that, you've worked so hard to do your mission for Krishna, does that mean that everyone's going to be impressed and pleased with what you do? No. So who criticized him after everything is done? Yes, Luke Prabhu? The gopis. The gopis are like, Brahma, what are you doing? What kind of nonsense bodies have you given us? And why on earth did you give us these eyelids? We try to flick, and every time we flick, we can't see Krishna properly. This is some rubbish creation that you've given us. So after all of that, so you know, we know that as well. Even in devotional life, we do our best for Krishna, but we're not always looking for praise from the people around us, because, you know, there's a saying, right? You can please some people some of the time. You can please all of the people maybe some of the time. Or, you know, is it? You can please some of the people all the time. You can please all the people some of the time, but you can never please everyone all the time.
So even with Brahma, after all of these things that he's did, so there's problems that we have to obviously overcome in our devotional life. The good thing is if we're situated and connect with Krishna, he gives us the ability to deal with those problems and be fixed with him as well, and not get affected by them like we would if it's in a material situation. Once Bhaktisauta Damodar Maharaj said to Prabhupada that, you know, Prabhupada, this is, you know, in the early days, in the 70s, when there's lots of, you know, managerial issues and, you know, just running the movement, right? And said to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, there's so many problems in this movement, there's so many this and that and this and all this stuff, you know, just complaining. And then Prabhupada said, yeah, it's these problems that actually drive, that thrive me and give us the mercy and give us the nectar, right? And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj also said that every problem that I see in Krishna, in the movement, is a cause of my good fortune, enables us to go deeper and take more mercy. So like this, we understand that we need penances, we need to perform penances, we need to intensify our practice. And really what's happening is it's the endeavor to try and perform the penance which is actually attracting Krishna. It's not even necessarily the quality of the penance. Like I've mentioned this before, once when I was serving Pankajanri Prabhu, and, you know, he said to me, I was driving him somewhere in a program, and he said to me in the car that, you know, do you think that your chanting is so good that your chanting is going to take you back to Godhead? Do you think that your service is so good and your sadhana is so good? Remember, we are mercy cases, but it's the endeavor that we're trying to do to try and connect with Krishna, and he's looking at the endeavor that is actually going to bring us close to him. So it's the endeavor because that's an expression of our love. Right? Tesam satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I'll give them the understanding which they can come to me. So we're trying to perform these penances as an attempt to connect to Krishna. It's not necessarily the quality itself that's going to attract Krishna, because there are probably many beings out there that are doing much better service and much better focus and understanding of the, you know, knowledge around Krishna than we have. But at least we can endeavor from our side to do our best as well. Okay, I'll pause here. Is there any questions, comments? Yep, Tarita Prabhu.
Thank you very much. I just thought I'd to really share something regarding prasadam. When I was reading Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, there was some rich guest, whatever, in some program, and then he was attempting to enjoy some sweet, and then one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta told him, hey, you are very knowledgeable. He was very shastic. He said, do you attempt to enjoy that prasadam, or that prasadam is going to enjoy you? He was very offended by it, and then he wrote a letter to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And then he elaborated a little bit something very incredible, which was such a different angle in meditation regarding to taking prasadam. He said, we always sit and see plate in front of us down with all our senses and anticipation to enjoy that, to relish, to forget ourselves. But then he said, prasadam is no different from Krishna. We have to consider that we are to be enjoyed by prasadam, not that we enjoy prasad. You have to see Krishna's smiling face there. His saliva is there. So we submit ourselves fully down to please him to take this prasadam. And then we are in this way taken in the mood of servant, not just totally forgetting who we are. That we see, you know, nice prasadam, we totally forget who we are. Oh, let me take second one. Totally forget who we are. It's because of incredible meditation, which is may be difficult, but to be see ourselves as to be enjoyed by prasadam, not to enjoy prasadam. Just something which can be useful for meditation. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yes, it's similar to when you know, it's mentioned that we are not taking darshan; we are there to be seen by Krishna. As we may not have the vision to actually see Krishna, but we come here to be seen by Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Govinda Prabhu.
Thank you for your stimulating class. You mentioned Tivrena. I'm going to read the last sentence of the purport to the verse, because it's very confusing for me, and I'm wondering if someone in there, yourself, or someone might be able to explain it. And it's essentially this. The sentence is this. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called Tivra, similarly, unmixed Bhakti Yoga of hearing, chanting, etc., may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. So my question is, if there's inner motive, how can it be unmixed? What does it mean for Bhakti Yoga to be unmixed? Because if someone has inner motive, for me it means it's mixed, but in this sentence, unmixed devotional service with inner motive. So I don't really understand it.
Actually, you don't. Prabhupada, would you like to share any thought on that? Oh, okay.
The last sentence of the Tivrena Bhakti Yoga verse says that it talks about performing unmixed devotional service even with inner motive. And my question is, if there is inner motive, how can it still be unmixed? What does it mean to be unmixed?
So your question is that how can it be unmixed if there is an inner motive, right? Yes. So when it is spoken about it, so ananya bhakti, unmixed means there is no other mixture, jnana, karma jnana, anarvi. So without karma and with jnana. And what could be the inner motive? So there can be some motive still when people are performing bhakti. And mishra bhakti, when we talk of mixed bhakti, it is basically for karma and jnana. Like demigods are karma mishra bhaktas and jnana mishra bhaktas. So you may not have the desire to enjoy the world, karma you know, don't have, but at the same time you may not have some jnana to get some philosophical speculation, etc., not to get into that. But still, even when you are performing devotional service, so unmixed devotional service doesn't mean completely pure devotional service. If you have still some desires which are, say, in devotional service, you want to do something for Krishna, but at the same time there is a side by side, there is a feeling that I'm building a construction, a temple. So then constructing a temple, and then there is a slight desire that I did something for Krishna. So now there is no material thing, but I did something for Krishna. So that is why even if such desires are there, it is still considered unmixed, because you are having, like yesterday I was mentioning about Brahma creating the world. That is material thing. But because it is given by Krishna, the desire, that is considered spiritual. So if you are having something, some desires, which are not for your own self, but at least some desires in devotional service. So I think that's what it's meant, unmixed, but at the same time, not mixed with karma and jnana, but at the same time, some slight desires which are there. That is the reason, say when gopis, they participate in Krishna's leela. It is said that some of the gopis who could not go to Rasa leela, although they are gopis, they are participating in Krishna's leela, and they gave up their life. They had to give up their life. They couldn't reach Krishna. This is during the pastime of Rasa leela, when Krishna called and all the gopis were rushing to him. Some of the gopis were stopped by the family members. So there it is said that they had a tinge of ego or tinge of desires which were burned down by not going there, by having that feeling of separation. Even when Krishna left gopis, so it is explained that gopis develop a tinge of ego that Krishna is only with me. So to finish that, Krishna left them. So now gopis are on such a high level that how we can think that they can have some desire. So these are some of the desires, or these are some of tinge which can be there to be removed by Krishna. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Thank you. I was thinking of some examples related to that. Like further, actually, it's okay because I'm conscious of the time. But I don't know. I mean,
you know, there are pastimes where even the high-level devotees, like when, you know, with Krishna, like the gopis, where they want to have that sense of ownership with Krishna, even though it's in a very high level, but there is some sense of self-pleasure. But it's still, like, very much with Krishna. Like, it's a bit hazy in my memory, but isn't there a pastime with Sita Devi and Lord Ram when a tortoise comes near to be near Lord Ram, and then Sita Devi says, no, no, you can't be near him.
That's Lakshman, not Sita Devi. Ananta.
Yes, yes. And then they become, and then that, do you remember who that tortoise becomes?
He became Kevat in his pastime, and then he could wash the feet of the Lord at that time.
Yes, yes. So it seems that even when you get to the high level of bhakti, even amongst those personalities, there is still a sense of, like, you know, I guess it's on a rustic platform, obviously. You know, we know that, obviously, even amongst the gopis, there are different camps currying favor for Krishna. You know, Chandavali's camp, Radharani's camp. So a lot of the emotions experienced here, like possessiveness and ownership and selfishness, they're there, even on a bhakti platform, but it's on a very much more like a rustic level, not so like ego-fueled, you know, like we have here. Is there anything else from any... Yes, Prabhujana Prabhu?
I'm really remembering something that Akinchana Prabhu had said to me, because I was just coming into the temple. He says, what you have to understand, really, though the person appears to be doing all sorts of nonsense, you don't know what's going on inside and what tapasya he has just to be here. And I can see an example. There's certain people that have to give up smoking, and their tapasya is much greater than the one who does it naturally. You know, I've never been attracted by the taste of those sort of things, or tea, or whatever. But the tapasya that they go through is, you have to understand that Krishna's looking inside at that tapasya that they're enduring, but they're carrying on irrespective of their weakness, so-called weakness. It's that determination to carry on, irrespective, that is, so you can't judge people. They may fail and fail and fail again, but actually, that their tapasya is that I'm going to carry on no matter what. That, you know, even if I go to hell, I still want to try and be a devotee. I don't know if that throws a light on the tapasya and penance.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the tapasya is a very personal thing. Like, we can't judge others on what they're doing. We can try to develop ourselves, but we should always have a mood of kindness towards others. And Prabhupada himself exemplified this. Like, you know, when people come to him who are meat eaters, and he would say, okay, gradually bring it down. Don't eat this meat. Just eat this kind of meat. He's not, like, condemning them or anything like that. And we know that even our great Vaishnavas, like if you look at Narad Muni, he told Migrari the hunter, that just kill the animals fully, not half killing them. Now for us it's like, you know, what is that? But, you know, he knew that that's going to be for him a progress in his penance towards the path towards, you know, God realization. And we don't know who anyone is, people coming with all sorts of conditionings, but they can end up becoming such amazing personalities, like these Prabhupada disciples, and, you know, in the old ancient times, you've got like Ratnakar, who then became Valmiki, you know, he was a robber, you know. So people come from all sorts of backgrounds, so we're not here to judge anyone. We just try to help people from where they're at and try to help them in their journey, you know. So I'm conscious of the time, obviously, it's breakfast being served now, so if any devotees want to go for breakfast, then you can. I'll take one more question, and then...
Hare Krishna. So I wonder, the tapasya in the mode of goodness, is that kind of to safeguard us from having too much of a mixture of like personal selfish motives? So because if you're in like the mode of passion, you might want to gain something for yourself, but if you're in ignorance, that's kind of you're kind of separated from the whole point,
yeah.
Which is to please Krishna.
They say actually. Kapila, they've said that the devotees, when you perform devotional service in mode of ignorance, you are like a separatist. He mentioned that in the when he's talking about Shankha Yoga, they're known as separatists. Whereas in mode of passion, you can be doing a lot of it for name and fame, and you know that kind of material glory. Because you know when you do tapasya, you get a lot of material benediction. Whereas in goodness, obviously, it's the desire to connect, develop that you know that high level knowledge and understanding, and develop like a devotional mood.
Right. Then in a practical way, so how do we cool ourselves, like just chill out, not be so passionate about something, but just like rather just, you know, do it just because you're instructed to do so. Like,
yeah, you do your best with it, but at the same time, you have to be also like detached from how Krishna wants the results to go. As long as you know that you've done your best with it, and also like if you're not sure if you're having the right mentality, then you can obviously consult your superiors, your devotees to help you, and also nourish your mind with the understanding, the knowledge, right? Siddhanta bolya chite nakara lash iha lage Krishna hoite shudradi manas. You strengthen your mind with the knowledge of the Siddhanta, and that will help you to understand what is the right mentality in which you do your services. And then you've obviously got the sadhus, the guru, that will also steer you in the right direction. And that's the tapasya as well. The tapasya of surrendering to other people for guidance instead of thinking that I know what's right, I know how to do it in the right way, you know, and, you know, like doing like that, but actually like listening to others. In fact, it's good to always make decisions in consultation with others, even though it's an austerity. Because sometimes it might seem easier and quicker to make a decision on your own. Whereas with others, it's a bit longer, you have to, they might give you something which you didn't want to consider, and you know, it slows you down, but long run, it's actually probably for a better reason.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.